All right, here we go. Everything set in the booth? Thumbs up. Good sign. I will return your thumbs up and say talent ready. Put it in the book. Episode 135. One Tony Esposito. 135. Okay, all set? Yeah? Okay. But don't start yet. Three S's. You're supposed to remind me of the three S's. I'm not supposed to remind you of the three S's. One of us is supposed to remind one of us of the three S's. But you should be reminding me, but that's another discussion. All right, here we go. Three S's. Star, smile, strong. Now we can go. Ready? Okay. Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNPlus.com. New episode is posted every Monday for your podcasting pleasure. Your binging buffet. Your listening leisure. Whatever alliteration you want to use for this podcast, feel free. But thank you once again for tuning in, clicking on, scrolling down, swiping over, whatever it is you do to find us on a weekly or regular basis. Or do you binge? Maybe you listen to, you know, on a Saturday, you just listen to, you know, 8 episodes at a time. Wow, if you do. Thank you. That's usually, that kind of binging is usually reserved for something like Game of Thrones or something. So if you're doing that with the good old podcast here, that is much appreciated. But hopefully you are listening on a regular basis, a weekly basis, 1 hour a week. Is that so much to ask for what I hope you find to be some unique and fun and interesting entertainment via the podcasting waves, or not the radio waves, or really not even waves, probably, in this digital world. Still used to talking in radio terms. But thank you so much for joining us. Episode 135. Oh, yes, don't forget, if you are going to be binging, don't forget the landing page here at WGNPlus.com. You go on there. And you go to the entertainment section, and then you see the prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there they are. All 134 previous episodes, which can only mean that this is episode 135. One, Tony Esposito. And I'm not even going to explain that. You either get it or you don't. But my Tony Esposito fans out there certainly understand when I say 135. In fact, that really describes Tonio. He is the number 135, isn't he? Anyway, I have to just very quickly off the top of my head here thinking about Tony. I wasn't expecting to talk about that, but Tony Esposito, a Hall of Fame goaltender, played his entire, well, almost his entire career with the Chicago Blackhawks, aside from one season, not even a full season, I don't think, with the Montreal Canadiens in the late 60s. But for the rest of his career, played in a Blackhawk sweater, eh? And one of my idols growing up, loved hockey, still do, huge Hawk fan. The Hawks are testing our fandom this year, certainly. Wow. Tough season. Tough season. But I must say, I'm not surprised. It's been a tough road to hoe the last 3 or 4 years here. And while they've done well in the regular season, they haven't done very well in the playoffs. And they weren't doing well early this season, which brought on the firing of their very popular, very successful, and most likely future Hall of Fame coach, Joel Quenneville. So, yeah, they got a new coach, and they're finding their way with a new system and some roster holes. Tough season. Hopefully they will be able to bounce back soon. But hockey is a very cyclical sport, and while the Hawks were on top for and one of the top teams in the last, you know, for the last 10 or 11 years, and three Stanley Cups within that time, it can also go the other way. So, but Blackhawk fans, if anything, are loyal. At least the real ones are. We'll see how real all those Hawk fans are now. Were there a lot of bandwagon people? I notice the Bears are having a very successful season this year. First place. Certainly playoff bound, and who knows how far they can go. I don't know if that's a if that's a comment on the quality or the state of the NFL that the Bears are, what, 9-5 or something? I don't know. Hey, more power to them. It's good to see a Chicago team, the Chicago Bears, doing well. It's been a long time, but I've watched a few games, and I it's hard to believe that they have risen that fast when they were 5-10 last year. I didn't see much of a change personnel-wise, so who knows? Maybe their new coach does have the magic touch. We'll see in the playoffs. To me, the regular season is just a means to an end. The goal is the playoffs. The goal is a Super Bowl. So hopefully they won't be one and out, as they have been many years. They make the playoffs and they play one game and they lose. So hopefully that's not the case. But my point was that over the last 10 or 12 years, the Blackhawks have been one of the dominant sports teams in this city. And that's saying something when you've got teams like the Bears, who have a fiercely loyal following, and obviously the Cubs winning the World Series finally after 108 years. But the Blackhawks won three Stanley Cups, and people have been walking around this city for the last decade with Blackhawk jerseys, Blackhawk hats, Blackhawk hoodies, Blackhawk anything. And just as a casual observance now, I've been noticing less Blackhawks apparel and more Bears apparel again. So I just wonder, I hope that the Blackhawk fans that were cultivated over the last decade, most of them hopefully were not just bandwagon people and they're on to the next shiny object. Because there's those of us who have been following the Blackhawks for many, many decades during some great times and some really low times, and then some great times again. And that's all a part of being a fan. So hopefully we will continue to see those Blackhawk jerseys, and we will see those seats in at the United Center filled for Blackhawks games. But it's going to be a tough ride. This season, I think we can say, is pretty much a write-off. And so hopefully they will do well in the draft and bounce back next year. We shall see. But anyways, getting back to I started. Oh, I love how I digress, don't you? But hopefully there's information and interesting and entertainment things within those little digressive detours that I usually take here at the podcast. My point was, yes, Tony Esposito, one of my idols, has been since I was a little kid. And the point of bringing him up, in addition to the number of this podcast, number 135, is after working at WGN on the radio for many years, during that Blackhawk renaissance, got to meet many of the players, had them on the radio, spoke with them, and one of my great honors and thrills was to actually meet Tony Esposito, to the point where I saw him on a semi-regular basis when we would broadcast from Blackhawk games. And he knew I was a fan, and I wouldn't say we became friends. We weren't friends in any real sense, but he certainly would talk to me and acknowledge me, and we would have great conversations, and he always went out of the way to say hi and spend some time. And that was a thrill for me because, as I said, being a kid, sitting in the stands at the old Chicago Stadium and watching him play and playing goalie on my own, both in ice and floor hockey and out in the alley when I was a little kid, and to have him acknowledge me was very cool, just by sight. And over the last couple of years, I have to say, I've been even more touched. I've gotten Christmas cards from Tony Esposito. And I got one a couple of weeks ago, one of the first ones that I got this season. And I was like, wow, holy smokes. How cool is this? I have it displayed in my house. Tony-O sending Jimmy-O a Christmas card. It really is heartwarming. I look forward to it every Christmas season now. I only hope that Tony knows what that simple gesture means to someone like me who's been a fan of his and an admirer. He really was a role model of mine when I was growing up, and I think I chose very well. Great player, classy guy, and he certainly deserved the honor and the status that I at least gave to him. And I got a Christmas card from him the last two or three years now. How cool is that? So, I don't know why. That started out with saying this is episode 135. I'm looking on my notes here for the show. And nowhere on it does it say, 11-minute discussion about Blackhawks, Tony Esposito, and the Bears. But that's what you love about an Elton Jim podcast. At least that's what I love. It can go anywhere at any time. There are no rules here. That's the whole part. Isn't that the whole draw of the podcast? No rules. It's the Wild West. So I've got my holster on. And I am fully embraced that. Yeah, it's supposed to be an hour long, I guess. Sometimes it's shorter. Sometimes it's much longer. And hopefully when it's much longer, it's as entertaining as the hour ones are, or even the ones that are a little shorter. That's the goal. Hopefully you are listening because you like to listen. And then I guess that's the true determining factor. You don't have to listen to this at all. This is something that you have to make an effort. At least on the radio, it's out there. You know, you're driving in your car, you hit a button, and there's the radio, and maybe people listen to you by accident. But podcasts, that's a proactive choice. So once again, thank you for your loyalty and making that proactive effort to listen. We will do our best to make it worth your while. So what I wanted to talk about was a few weeks ago, I talked about how my wife and I went on a trip to Europe on a river cruise, and we went through Germany and Austria and Hungary. And I always like to come back and share a few things. I'm not sharing photos with you. I know that photos from a trip are not interesting for anyone except those who went on the trip. Yes, I post a few photos on my Facebook page when we come back from a trip. I mean, it's a logical, normal thing to do. You want to share your fun experiences with people, but I don't post 100 of them. And Lord knows I take quite a few. I just try to post a few pictures that are representative of the places that we went. I don't go crazy because I know that most people, while interested on a certain level about your vacation, at the end of the day, you know, they didn't go. So yeah, interesting, nice. Oh, but you know, how engrossed? They don't know the stories behind the photos. They don't, you know, and we all have those little moments. When you're on a trip, you know, those little moments happen, and they happen there, and you cannot communicate those to other people. What is funny to you that happened on a trip most of the time is not funny to the general public when you get home, unless it's really genuinely funny. You need to test it out on civilians that you can trust before you start talking to the masses and telling some of your trip stories, because many times if you weren't there, you don't get it. So I try to to certainly, you know, share with you, but I'm also very careful as to what I share, because I know that, you know what, yeah, it might be cool for you, because you went, but we didn't go, and so I don't know what you're talking about. But I think when there's some general things that you can, that the, you know, that other people can genuinely maybe learn from, and then it motivates them to maybe go to that place or look something up or try something new. Well, then I think that's okay. And that's what I'm going to do right now. Under the heading of my Toronto's travels, I talked in general about our trip and some of the things that we saw. But inevitably, I always come back from a trip with something that I seem to incorporate into my regular life after a while. And from, especially when I go to a foreign country or even within the States here, it's always fun to visit different places and see different things, whether it's different international cultures or even regional cultures here in the United States. And there are things that happen in certain cities or certain parts even of this country that we don't practice here at home, or they are not practiced across the country. And you go, wow. I never heard of that before. And a lot of the things that I come back with, sometimes they're, apparel, something kind of cool that are, especially if you go to Europe, here's a different kind of hat that someone wears or something. But most of the time, it is food related, because that really is the big uniter when you go to another country. You taste the food. That's really the great ambassador of a culture, regionally or internationally, is the food. Most countries and even some states have very specific foods that they eat. And when you go there, it's always fun to at least test the waters. They don't need to become staples in your diet, but it is good to try them out. And sometimes you are shocked and going, wow, this is great. And you do incorporate, and living here in Chicago, we have such a diverse population with so many European immigrants that it's not hard to begin to incorporate some of the foods that you taste in foreign lands into your regular rotation of food, because in Chicago here, we've got restaurants of just about every culture. So that's kind of cool. You can go to a foreign country and test and find it out and test it. And when you come back home, if there is something that you really like, you could usually find a restaurant or a store that carries that item, that product, or that specific dish if you go to a restaurant. And you could do it vice versa. You could start here at home and do some research and then go there and find it. But I always find that it's when you're in a different country, especially, you find these things. There's some things that are very well known that you have to taste. Then you go to, you may be walking down the street and you just see something in a window, or you go to a restaurant and you try something and you've never even heard about it before. And then you go, wow. That's good, and I want to have that more than just on my vacation. I want to have that when I get home, and so I think it's more fun when you discover it in its element, in its natural habitat, in its native land, and then you decide to bring it in to your own regular life when you get home. To me, that's more fun. But I do research on, countries and everything. I always get all those travel books, even though I know it's easy to get online. I always like to have a travel book. You know me. I like tangible things. And I go to the library and go and get the, Frommer's or Fodor's travel books and do some research on the cities or the countries that I may be visiting and listing some of the key sites that I should see and some other things. So at least I know and have something of a familiarity with a new place before I get there. But then, of course, there's always room to discover new things. And it usually does happen. And I have incorporated many of those into my life. Like, for instance, if you can find it. When I first got married, we went to London on our honeymoon. And, yes, we saw all the sights you're supposed to see. You know, Big Ben, Stonehenge, Parliament, everything. But what did I come home with that I wanted to replicate here in the United States? They have a candy bar in England, or in London specifically, called Boost. It's made by Cadbury. Love it. It's like a Twix bar, and I hate to use the term, but it really is. It's a Twix bar on steroids. It is a Twix bar in heaven, okay? It is a great chocolate and a cookie inside with caramel, and oh my God, Boost. And sometimes you can find them here at some at stores that import some candies, but most of the time you can't. And I have ordered them online, boxes, you know, just to have them. And every time we go to England, the first thing I do is go into a convenience store and buy some Boosts. Or if I know if somebody's going to England, hey, could you bring back 5 Boosts? Boost. So there you go. That would be one of my favorite candy bars of all time, even though I can't get it here on a regular basis, which is probably good for my health. But, you know, but that was one of the first examples of this. And there are many others of those. And I'm going to talk about a few today. So on our trip, as I said, we went to Germany and Austria and Budapest. We followed the Danube. The Danube River, the beautiful blue Danube. And so when we went to Germany, we took a side trip to Munich, one of the major cities. And it's a beautiful city, historic city. And so as part of the tour that we went on, we went to a well-known restaurant there. And I think it was called the Ratskeller. And wow, what a great restaurant. Very, very traditional Bavarian kind of restaurant. And, you know, in Germany, and especially in Munich, they drink beer like water. I mean, it is beer. Beer, beer. Everywhere you go is beer. Everywhere in Germany is beer. Even in Austria to some extent, but certainly in Germany, beer is water. It is just, I mean, I understand I think the drinking age is 16. McDonald's. McDonald's in Germany sells beer, and 16-year-old kids can get a beer and a McBrew. I don't know if that's what they're called, a McBrewski. I don't know what they're called, but yeah, the McDonald's even sells beer. That's how prevalent beer is. And then I you know, we were there obviously in the wintertime, but I can only imagine when you talk about Oktoberfest, which actually happens in September as well as October, but I mean, from the way they describe it, the whole city of Munich is just one big party, and there are beer tents and beer anythings everywhere. Beer, beer, beer. Now, I like beer, but I'm not a crazy beer head, and I have some craft beers, some, you know, on and off, but I was never a beer fan, to be honest with you. Even when you first start drinking, you know, when you turn 21, I was never a big beer guy. Whatever, I was always like, you know what, whatever everyone else has, I'll just have that. My view was always, there's one giant spigot of beer, and there's about 17 or about 100 different cans that go through that spigot. Because to me, a lot of beer at least used to taste the same. Now I know the craft beer thing is all different, but anyway, so I'm not a huge connoisseur of beer. So when we go to this restaurant, our tour guide says, well, you know, everybody can, you know, have a beer, have a beer. I mean, that's what everybody says, saying, have a beer, have a beer, have a beer. And the beers are huge there. The glasses of beer are huge. It's unbelievable. It is a beer-centric society. There's no question about that. But we went to this restaurant, and the tour guide said, well, if you're not into beer, we've got a soft drink here called Spezi. 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 I'm like, oh, okay. What's Spezi? And she described it as an orange drink mixed with cola. And I thought that was really interesting. I never really, you know, I never thought of that. It wasn't some concoction that I ever, you know, mixed when I was a kid. You know, did you ever do that when you were a kid? You know, just make some weird soft drinks by combining everything. I never put, orange drink, like a Fanta orange or something, with Coke. I never did that. But that's what someone did there. It's almost like it's our version of an Arnold Palmer. You know the Arnold Palmer? Created by the great golfer Arnold Palmer, which is lemonade and iced tea. And that's one of my favorite summer drinks. Got to have a little more lemonade than the iced tea, in my view. I don't know what the mixologist would say as to what, but I always like a little more lemonade than iced tea, a little more sugar. So I'm like, well, I'm going to try that. I can get a beer anywhere, and I'll have another beer in Munich somewhere as the day goes on. So let me try this Spezi. So they bring this this drink. And oh my God, I fell in love with it. Spezi, Spezi. That's not the type. That's the brand. And so I had two Spezis with lunch, and I was like, "Wow, I'm going to have to try that again." And sure enough, when we came home, we went to World Market, which has a lot of, obviously, World Market, right? And they had Spezi in cans. So I think now, and if you've listened to me with any kind of regularity, you know that over the last couple of years, I've never even been a big pop drinker. I don't really drink a lot of pop at all. My wife drinks ginger ale, but I was never really a big pop drinker at home. And so a few years ago, I discovered this brand from Milwaukee called Sprecher's, especially their grape. I love their grape soda, Sprecher's grape soda. And I decided that if I had a soft drink of choice, the official soft drink of Jim Toronto, of Elton Jim, it would be Sprecher's grape soda. But I have to say that after now going to Munich and trying Spezi, I wouldn't say that it has overcome my Sprecher's, but it certainly is right up there. And now that I know that I have access to it on a regular basis, I might be getting Spezi on a regular basis. So once again, if you do invite me over to your home, I have talked about this, either Sprecher's grape, Strongbow, hard cider. And now I will throw in as an added to give you a little more variety if you want to entertain me at any kind of social function. If you do invite me, I will need at least one of these three. Strongbow, hard cider, Sprecher's grape soda, or Spezi from Germany. Or is that all? I thought so, until we went to Austria. So we were at the Austrian Fine Arts Museum, and we were having lunch there, and we were with a guide again. And my wife asked if they had any ginger ale. I don't know, for some reason, ginger ale is always the mystery drink. Some places have it, some places don't. I don't know why ginger ale has this allure to it, or this mysterioso, personality, or why it's just not distributed. Why isn't it everywhere? It's Coke, 7-Up, and ginger ale, right? Why not? On those guns that they, the little guns that the guys at the bar usually give your soft drinks, ginger ale is always one of the little buttons, wasn't it? But you go to restaurants and, we don't have ginger ale. So my wife asks the waiter if they have ginger ale, and he says, "Well, we don't have ginger ale, but we have the Austrian version of ginger ale. I will bring you this. I will bring you this. You will love it." Okay, right? One year in a foreign country, right? So she says, okay, well, they bring this bottle of something called Almdudler, A-L-M-D-U-D-L-E-R, Almdudler. And it comes in this bottle, and it's got these two, it's got this, you know, drawing of a cartoon of these two Alpine people kind of singing. Later on, I found out that Almdudler is translated, means yodeling. So that's why there's these two Alpine people yodeling on the, these, you know, these cartoon people yodeling on the bottle. Well, she pours this over ice and goes, wow, is that good? So I said, give me an Almdudler. You know, I knew it was a soft drink, folks. That's not a code for anything. Give me an Almdudler. And wow, holy smokes. If I thought I liked Spezi in Munich 3 days later in Vienna, Austria, I'm digging Almdudler. So much so that I took the bottle with me. I said to my wife, here, put this in your purse. We're taking this home. Because we have to find this stuff at home as well. So I still have the bottle. It's kind of a memento now. And so when we came home, it's like we have to get this Almdudler. Now, it's not strictly ginger ale, but it's an herbal soft drink is the way they describe it. And it is very close to ginger ale, but it's also described as a lemonade. So I don't know if it's strictly ginger ale, but I thank God for this waiter who turned us on to Almdudler, Almdudler. And once again, we went to World Market looking for Spezi, and we found cans of Almdudler too. It was a mother load. We struck gold. It was a gold rush of European Bavarian soft drinks. So we took some cans of Spezi and a couple of cans of Almdudler. And I wish they had the bottle. And I'm glad I took the bottle home because the bottle's cool. Because we can only find the cans of Almdudler. But it is great. It is refreshing. I can't wait to have an Almdudler in the summer on a hot summer day. I think some Spezi with an Almdudler chaser is going to make for a great summer refreshment, and throw in the old standby, Sprecher's grape soda, and then in the evening, top it off with a few Strongbow hard ciders. Oh my gosh. I can't wait for summer. So add to that list of my favorite beverages. Almdudler, Almdudler, Austria's most, from what I understand, their most famous and most popular soft drink. So you've got Spezi from Munich, Germany, and you've got Almdudler from Austria. So once again, if you invite me over for any kind of a soiree, you have to have at least one of those four on hand. Strongbow, hard cider, and I like the apple taste, although I like the cherry blossom, but I like the apple, the vintage, the straight apple hard cider by Strongbow. Because it has an apple taste. A lot of these hard ciders, it's accent on the hard, and they forget about the cider. I like the taste of apples. That's why I'm getting an apple cider. So don't over-alcohol me. Have a nice mix. And I find Strongbow has that mix. So, Strongbow, hard apple cider, Sprecher's grape soda. Sprecher's, you know, is known for its root beer, but I'm digging the grape soda, which you can find at Menards. And I'm telling you this, so once again, if you do invite me, you know, you'll be able to do it. Then you have to go to World Market and go in the beverage department there and find either Spezi, S-P-E-Z-I, which is a mixture of orange and cola. It doesn't sound good on its face, folks, but trust me, it is really good and it is really refreshing. Spezi from Germany. Mainly Munich is where I tasted it. Or the Austrian cola, the Coke of Austria, if you will. The dominant soft drink of Austria. Almdudler. Or maybe it's Almdudler. I don't know. I'm going to go with Dudler. Almdudler. Also at World Market. I might be other places and certainly could find it online, but we found cans of it at World Market. And so that makes an Elton Jim a pretty happy guy in terms of his beverages. So once again, yes, the sights and sounds and tastes and cultures from foreign countries are always, at least for me, are so great to experience and indulge in and to be engulfed in. And that's why I love traveling so much. But it's also fun to bring a little piece of those back with you. And if you can incorporate those into your regular routine, it's kind of fun. And aside, yeah, I mean, aside from, as I said, wearing some apparel from a foreign country, which you can do, that is indigenous to that area or that country, what we usually do bring back, or we taste, is the food and the drink of a country. And that you can bring home with you, as I have found. So I may travel thousands and thousands of miles, right? And I always just come home with, at the end of the day, a new can of pop I like. So once again, the top four, Casey Kasem, counting them down. Ponderous, man, ponderous. I can't even rate these. But I keep saying them over and over, so hopefully you will be motivated to check them out as well. And if you do, since we can't talk here on the podcast, if you do try any of these, please go to my Facebook page, Jim Toronto or Elton Jim, it's up there, and let me know if you found these and tasted any of these. Because I'll tell you, I'm only sharing these because I really like these. So, Strongbow, Apple, Hard Cider. To me, so far, the best of the bunch. Sprecher's Grape Soda. Spezi, Spezi, World Market from Germany. Or Almdudler, a ginger ale-ish kind of soft drink. From Austria, Almdudler. Those are the big four, folks. If you want an Elton Jim at your party this summer, those are the four you'll need. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And now we take a stroll over to... Well, we knock on the door of the Pop Culture Club, and oh, look who's answering. It's Emily Arminetti. Hey, I didn't even give the right knock. That was not the secret Pop Culture Club knock.
I don't know why I opened the door.
Yeah, because... once again, I don't know who gave you, First of all, you're supposed to slide that little door right by your eyes to see who it is.
Yes.
And then they're supposed to give the knock. And
the knock comes first. Then the because
Well, no, see that's no the yeah, but see that's the way you think it is. That's the way a novice would do it, and that's how we would know that you are not a member, because you would think it's done that way. But the way we do it is you first slide, cuz you're supposed to have a sense that someone's even at the door.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay. That's what it is. It's a whole kind of vibe thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have to talk because it's always, as I always say to podcast listeners here, yes, you can always listen at your leisure, which is a part of the podcast appeal, but and you can binge, but hopefully you do this on a week-to-week basis, because then you are certainly up to date, because many times we will reference previous podcasts and what we talked about, and lo and behold, before the ink was even dry on the last podcast, it was already out of date.
Right.
Because when we were recording the last podcast, we were talking about the Golden Globe nominations had just come out that day when we recorded it, and we had also mentioned how the Academy Awards had just announced that they were going to have Kevin Hart, the comedian, and box office appeal was going to... go ahead. What?
I was going to say, you were very excited that Kimmel was out.
Yes, I was. Well, I was happy that Kimmel was out. I didn't think he did a good job. And
right.
And I'm not a huge Kevin Hart fan, but I was like, well, at least there's someone else doing it. And to me, and we'll talk about this. I mean, at this point, I don't even care who hosts the Oscars. I think it's, you know, we'll get into this, but so Kevin Hart was announced as the host, and within, what, maybe 48, 72 hours.
Oh, not even. It was 24 hours.
Yeah.
The very next day that.
He all of a sudden surprised the world by dropping out based on a mini controversy of some homophobic tweets that he made about 10 years ago. And more and more we are learning and people are not heeding what many people, including myself, have always said about the internet, that while it can be a great tool, it can also be something that can do great detriment to people's lives and careers.
Oh, yeah, it'll come back to bite you.
Well, you know what this is? You know what the funny thing is? I don't know about when you went to school. We're about 10 years difference in age. When I was a little kid, one of the threats that people always gave you was that if you didn't behave, especially when you were in school, if you didn't behave, it would go on your permanent record. That was
permanent record.
Yeah.
The threat of this
ominous permanent record. It was like this this book that it was like Santa's book of naughty and nice. You know, it was like the Jewish book when you have to atone for your sins and God writes your name in the book. I mean, there was this threat of this book that had everything you did, and it would follow you for the rest of your life. And as we got older, we realized that there was no permanent record, really. And even if there was, in the inefficiency of most offices in this country, the odds that that file would ever follow you to your next place, where would it be filed?
But you're actually giving me a really good idea for disciplining my children, because I'm like, why have I not used the permanent record
against them?
They're young enough.
They don't get it.
I could probably fool them into thinking that there's
the sad part is now it does exist. It's called the internet.
That's right.
And it does follow you, and it doesn't go away, and I don't care how many times you hit delete. Somewhere, you know, your digital finger, your digital footprint does last and does not go away as much as you think. You hit recycle bin and something is gone. And,
go ahead.
Yeah. So Kevin Hart.
I was going to say, you know that I'm a big Bravo fan and a big Housewives fan. And a wise Real Housewife of New York named Dorinda Medley once said, say it, forget it, write it, regret it. And I think that's what's happening to a lot of these people on Twitter.
Yeah.
But back to the Kevin Hart thing. The weird thing about it to me is that, so he stepped down, and the party line is that, you know, they chose him, you know, to be on the Oscars. I mean, this is not the first time that this people have been up in arms about, you know, the stuff that these specific tweets that are referenced here, but apparently the Academy called him and said, like, hey, we're gonna need you to publicly apologize for those tweets, you know, and he said no, I've already commented publicly on those tweets a long time ago. I've put it behind me. I'm not gonna do that, you know. I've already done that. And So then he decided to step down because he didn't want to cast a shadow over it. He didn't want to apologize. He didn't want to do what they asked him to do. But the weirdest part about it is that in the video he posted to explain that he was stepping down and why, he went on to apologize for the tweets. So
well, of course.
I don't understand. I don't get it.
This is a very slippery slope. I think it's getting ridiculous. The thing that bugs me the most, and I don't know if he handled it well or not. I think he was trying to make a stand. I think that he felt that, I think the reason that he didn't want to apologize, from what I was able to read through between the lines, because he mentioned internet trolls several times in his kind of explanation of why, you know, to your point, he said, I've done this already. And he mentioned internet trolls. And so I felt like he was sort of beating his chest or sort of sending a signal that I am not going to let the internet trolls win and change me, and I'm not going to capitulate to them.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that, you know, what bugs me about this is, I don't know, is it, you know, this is the dark side of the internet as well, is that the anonymity of the internet allows people to live in the shadows and potentially, you know, sabotage people if they want without ever really having to come forth and stand up to say, you know, I accuse. And so the question is, you know, who dug this stuff up? Are they Kevin Hart haters? Are they just internet trolls that just look for the dark side on anyone? Are they someone, is there some kind of morality police, especially, you know, for some of the more militant or aggressive groups out there, if you're going to look at, you know, the homosexual or the LGBTQ, STR, U, V, W, X, Y, Z, or whatever it is? Are there people that now vet people to just say, okay, you know, this person has this high profile thing that's, you know, especially Academy Awards, it's... you know, it's entertainment related and arts related, and so does this person. You know, do they measure up to our standards? I don't know who did this, and I don't know if we'll ever find that out. But I guess what bugs me about it is that, you know, here once again, you know, 5 years ago everybody was complaining that the Oscars were too white. Remember that?
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, and there was
Oscars,
a whole
hashtag Oscars
yeah,
so white.
Yeah. And so now the Oscars, you know, to their credit, they the head of the Oscars now is an African-American woman. They've certainly made strides over the last couple of years to promote diversity. They've tried to make this more, you know, inclusive. And now they name an African-American host. And still, it's like, well, but now it's not, you know, politically correct enough, or it's not pro-women enough, or it's not pro-gay enough. I don't know what we can, I don't know who can pass this test now. Because whose closet doesn't have at least a skeleton bone in it?
Well, and I think the thing is, to your point about vetting, you know, I mean, it's not even like Kevin Hart had skeletons in his closet. His skeletons, a lot of his skeletons
were there
on full display.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, he is a little edgy. He's had some scandal in his personal life. I mean, this is all well covered territory in the entertainment news. So, you know, how the people making the selection at the Academy, I mean, they know that they're choosing.
Well, because what happens is once it gets
squeaky clean,
I guarantee you that when they sat down and they were debating who to get or discussing who to get, Kevin Hart's name came up, and they probably said, "Oh, you know, wait a minute, blah blah blah." And I'm sure within the room, there was a sense of, oh, "Okay, here's a possible issue," but there was kind of a sense of logic. But unfortunately, when something hits the internet, there is such an irrational overreaction immediately that, oh my God, this is the word, you know, all it takes is one person to say, oh my God, this is terrible, this is an outrage, and suddenly everybody just drops and capitulates to these to this anonymous person or this anonymous movement of four people that are internet savvy enough to get their word out to say, hey, did you see this? This is terrible. Boycott the Oscars. That's all they need to hear. Then ABC gets on the line and says, what are you going to do about this? And suddenly it's a controversy when it really isn't a controversy, because to your point, this isn't like he was trying to hide this. He has said it. He has, apologized for it. And in my view, too, I mean, if you're in one of these minority groups that is trying to, you know, to rise and be equal, how am I supposed? What? Yeah, you know what? I was raised 40 years ago in a different time, so I can't change. Don't you want me to change? Yes, I may have said, or in Kevin Hart's position or someone else's, yes, I may have said something 5 or 10 years ago, but maybe now I have a different outlook and I have seen the errors of my ways and I am changing, or I have changed.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because do you know who Nick Cannon is?
Of course.
Okay, so Nick Cannon, in the midst of all this, starts digging up old tweets.
Yeah, because he's become a militant now on the other side. He wears a turban the whole thing.
He's defending Kevin Hart, but his way of doing it basically digging up tweets from white female comedians.
Right.
Similar tone, like homophobic in nature, you would say. And so he's like reposting these tweets saying like, oh, and well, what did anybody get upset when Chelsea Handler said this, or when Sarah Silverman said this, or Amy Schumer? Now, it's funny because it was noted in one of the articles about the Nick Cannon thing that Sarah Silverman over time has said, like, you know, I, like everyone else, I learn and I grow, and I sometimes look back at my past material and I cringe at some of the things that I've said. But, you know, I'm human and I'm evolving over time, and I make mistakes and I change. And I thought, like, you know, that makes sense. I mean, she knows not everything she said. And
Course.
A lot of comedians would take a really simple, easy way of defending it by saying, you know what, I'm a comedian, it's my job to be funny. And sometimes that can be
I think that's legitimate. But at the same time, I mean, I know myself. In terms of, like I said, when I grew up watching, you know, Archie Bunker. And so I know that I've said things that are probably, oh my gosh. But my point is, hopefully in the last 40, 50 years that, you know, and even the last 10 or 15, whatever you want to say, is the point is you realize, just like Sarah Silverman said, and I think the way Kevin Hart said, but my point is, you know, What gets me, and I think I've talked about this before, what drives me crazy about this anti-Trump thing, as I've said many times, I am not a fan of Donald Trump, but I am also not a fan of people that just hate Donald Trump because that's the sport of the day. And what I don't like is that the people that were complaining about not having power and about the people that had it and how they acted, when those people get the power, they act the same. If you were telling me for all this time how terrible the people in power were, and you said why they were, when you get into power, what you should do is now set an example to say, you see how bad it was? We're changing. But what I'm seeing on both sides of the political spectrum is, you don't think now that when the Democrats take charge of the House of Representatives that they're going to block everything Trump did, just like the Republicans did with Obama?
Sure, of course they will.
But my point is, what you should do is say, okay, now see the difference? You guys had gridlock. We are not going to have gridlock. This is the way it's supposed to be. But they're going to go tit for tat. And that's what bugs me, is that if you're telling me how bad someone is, then when I finally say yes to you, then you're not supposed to act worse or just like them. You're supposed to show me the new way. And isn't the new way of this to say, okay, you know what? Maybe when you made these comments, but now you're sorry that you made them, or you've moved on and now you don't feel that way. Hey, that's great. Welcome.
Welcome to the welcome. You're improving, or you're seeing our point. Welcome. Don't castigate me because I said something 20 years ago.
Right. Well, and this again, this is a really confusing situation because it isn't. I mean, who knows? I mean, who really knows what happened? But, you know, at face value, he made the decision to step down. He was not fired from the gig. But he stepped down because he felt that they were asking him to do something he didn't feel he should have to do. And, you know, he just didn't. I mean, and you know, as long as they didn't let him go and then say, like, well, we'll let you say you step down.
Right.
We'll assume right. that take it at face value. He really did step down. It's hard, though, because it's like, okay, all they did was ask him to apologize. So you can't, if he steps down, there's no one there to really blame, I suppose, just for, I mean, they asked him to apologize. He could say, no, I'm not going to apologize. And then he could say to them, like, you can fire me if you want to, but I'm not going to apologize. But it doesn't seem like that's exactly the way it went down. So
No, this was not cut and dry. And like I said, I think he was, you know, pounding his chest and being a little bravado as well to say, you know, I'm not gonna apologize again and stuff like that. I think there was a little macho in there, but then once again, like what Nick Cannon does, to say, well, why, you know, so then all of a sudden this is what you get. Instead of the the discussion being helpful, then it's like, oh, well, how come these people aren't,
right.
You know, and that's what we, because that's our first reaction. As I said, technology works so good on a whiteboard in a conference room in Silicon Valley. Where
right.
it gets screwed up is when it's released to the public, because the public
yeah.
is ridiculous. We are illogical. We are knee-jerk. We are emotionally driven. And I'm not saying everybody, but I mean, as a whole, and you see what happens. And so I'll tell you, but as I said earlier at the beginning of the segment, you know what? I don't see why the Oscars need a host, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, they're saying that Variety was reporting that is a real possibility that there might not be a host.
Well, I don't see who can pass the test now. I don't,
that was kind of covered, that they would either have no host or they would have multiple celebrities sort of acting as hosts throughout the show. And Whoopi Goldberg, who herself has hosted at least four Oscar
yeah.
ceremonies, years, she probably hasn't done it in,
yeah,
you know,
it's been a
over
while.
A decade. But so she said, you know, I really think, though, that the Oscars need a host because you need someone to take people through this or to jump in if something happens, which she has a good point, because remember what happened a couple of years ago with the whole
Jimmy Kimmel thing,
the whole Best Picture.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah, but what did Jimmy Kimmel do?
Well, Jimmy Kimmel had to go on stage yeah. and basically intervene.
Okay.
And
okay. And intervene. But what did he do? What did he do? He
okay,
just said,
so
wait
now,
a minute.
Well, he did, yeah. I mean, he kind of had to be the bearer okay. of bad news there, and he handled it in, a sensitive but humorous way.
All right, so who does that?
So
the
now,
producer of the show does that then.
Right, okay. So Whoopi Goldberg now is saying, oh, I really think they should have a host, and she was sort of throwing her hat in the ring, but she said, she said, I think I could be problematic, too, for the Academy.
Well, of course. Who can pass this?
But she's on TV every day. It's fine. Like, she's not going to be problematic. She's
I got news for you. Then if I wanted to sabotage Whoopi Goldberg, regardless if she's black and liberal and everything that fit and ticks all the boxes, then I'll go back, because there's a whole generation that does not remember that
right.
Whoopi Goldberg and Ted Danson went to the Friars Club in blackface.
I know, but what I'm saying is, Whoopi is, if anything, she was way edgier all those years ago.
Right.
When she was
hosting
the Oscars.
Well, because no one could be edgy. You can't be edgy anymore. You can't.
No.
There is such a ridiculous, and one thing I wanted to talk about too, there is such a high sensitivity level, and all it takes is for one person out of 350 million in this country and 7 billion in this world, all it takes is for one person to be offended and walls come down.
Yeah.
Some woman was offended by the song Baby It's Cold Outside Because the Christmas song, because it's about a guy and a woman and the guy trying to have her stay over and the woman constantly saying, no, I've got to go. And he's like, hey, it's cold and it's snowing. Stay the night. We understand the situation here. It's a playful little, it's a playful song. It was written in 1944.
Right, right.
And but then a station takes it off because this woman is offended, and then suddenly this meaningless song that is only played for six weeks out of the year is now a national debate. I mean, who can pass this test? And my point is, so you knew darn well that once this was happening, and I even said this before I saw this in the online the other day, I said, well, you know they're going to go to the well. They're going to go to Tom Hanks. They're going to go to Ellen DeGeneres, and they're going to go to Whoopi Goldberg. And sure enough, there's the three names.
Right.
Because you've got the white male, the sensitive white male, the white lesbian, and the black woman. I mean, all the boxes now are checked in terms of our needing to be diverse, and you can't have anybody that is potentially controversial.
Well, you know, back to the baby, it's cold outside thing. You know, William Shatner now is like fighting with people online about the whether or not it should be banned, which, you know, I think that actually some of the radio stations that banned it have now reinstated it because many of their listeners wanted it back. But it's interesting because, like, when you actually think about the lyrics, I mean, I can understand how people interpret it in that way in the context of, like, in the wake of, like, the Me Too movement and Time's Up and all that stuff. But like you said, it was written in the 40s. So you have to put it into context, you know.
Well, no one puts anything into that's like the
people
point.
People are talking about the line about the what's in this drink and trying to suggest that is like, date rape drugs, which, like, those didn't even exist back then. But
well, they still, did, but I mean, it's a playful
But here's the weird thing. If you watch, I've never seen, like, I've heard the Dean Martin version of it many times, but I've never seen any video. You know, I've never seen any, like, performance. I think there is one. But I think the song originally was in the movie Neptune's Daughter, and I did see the clip of it from that movie. And I have to say, if you watch that clip, it is a little date rapey and creepy. Well, like, you have to go back and.
All right, but see, once again, okay, you know what? But once again.
But I hear what you're saying, and I like that song. I do. I understand both sides of the argument about what it means when you're playing something like that
Well, you know what I always said. So I thought, and I've even said this on the radio, and even said it to a band that I know that has a female and a male singer. I always thought the greatest thing would be, and this is before the Me Too thing, is that you should switch the roles.
Well, didn't someone record it?
Well, that's what they should, because at this day now, the woman is supposed to be the aggressor anyway. Have fun with it. But my God, it's a flirty little song. But one person, and to your point, oh, well, some radio stations then started to reinstate it. My point is, they should have never unstated it.
Right.
That's my point. Because of one person, you know what? Turn the dial. Turn the station. Don't listen. I mean, that's what kills me, is that suddenly these outrageous viewpoints, these super, super sensitive, out of the logical, get credence. And then the corporate side gets all bristled because they feel like there's some kind of a internet explosion happening around them when it's like four people. You know, and that's what I mean. I just don't see where we're going. To my point about the Oscars, you know what? The only thing the host really does, if you watch the show, is does the opening monologue for 7 or 8 minutes. Aside from that, most of the show is you're hearing a voiceover person say, and now,
right,
Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. The host isn't even, he comes out every 40 minutes and tells them some quippy joke and goes away. And now, of course, in today's world, they have to do some Saturday Night Live sketch, you know, bringing in people or something. But that was never a part of the show until Ellen DeGeneres did the thing with the selfee.
Yeah.
So I don't understand, you know, and to Whippy's point, oh, well, we need a host to guide us through. It's an award show. What are we guide? This is no great pillar of society. It's a 2 or 3 hour too long entertainment show about entertainers giving themselves awards. Right. That's what this is. We need a sensitive host to help us through. Help who through what?
Well.
Nobody even gives two craps. At this point, we're in a. Everybody says, "Well, how come nobody's watching the Oscars anymore? How come no one's watching the award show?" Once again, gang, remember, we have a whole generation now who never got awards. Everybody got an award. Awards don't matter to this generation because they didn't have any importance. That's the underlying. You want to find the underlying point of this? The underlying point of this is not because the show is not entertaining, not because there aren't any blacks or whites or Hispanics or women or lesbians that aren't nominated. It's because there's a whole generation who was raised to not find or getting awards. There was no competition. Why do you think? You know, everybody says, "Oh, well, you know, they've expanded the awards to now have 10 for more diversity." I just heard the Grammys now expanded. They are going to expand theirs to 8. You know why? Because nobody cares who wins. Everybody wants to be nominated because they want the attention of being up for an award. So we have to say, well, how can we be more inclusive to have more people at least nominated? Because don't forget, when these kids were small, they all got awards. They're not used to losing.
Maybe there's your new idea for the Oscars. Participatory medals.
Well, yeah, well, what do you think 17 nominees is? That's what 17 nominees are. For as long as it existed, there were 5 nominees. How come in the last 10 years we have to expand? What changed?
I hear you. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, you know what changed? The generation changed of, oh, nobody looks at me? How come I didn't get picked? Mom, how come I'm not in the top 5? Well, because you weren't good enough. But that never mattered. I never had to be good enough. I just had to wake up. And you gave me a sticker. That's at the root of this. No one wants to talk about that. That's at the root of this. That's why award shows, nobody, tell me who won the award last year. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers.
I think you might maybe suggesting that the millennials have ruined the Oscars.
Oh, really? Well, you tell me. You tell me. All I know is it's impossible to find a host now. If you're going to, you can't get a comedian because a comedian, to your point earlier, a comedian, if you're a good comedian, you're supposed to offend.
So there's,
that's the whole idea of comedy.
The only comedians I can really think of who I can't, like, I really can't think of anything that they've said or done that's been offensive or that they may have skeletons would be Ellen, who's hosted before, or Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld's always been funny without being offensive.
Right.
But Jerry Seinfeld has also jumped in to defend Kevin Hart. And he's basically saying, well, whose loss is this really? Because,
well,
you know,
because
Kevin
a comedian,
Hart's going to be fine.
Yeah, because a comedian.
The Oscars need a host.
Well, yeah. Well, because like I said, so I don't even know if the Oscars need a host, to be honest with you. And I'm wondering, as this continues to escalate now, and we have all this ridiculousness, you know, once again, if I sound 500 years old, I don't even care anymore because it's so ridiculous. I would have to hope, and I don't know, you know, and maybe I'm offending you. I don't know. But my point is I would have to think there doesn't come a point that even if you're the most left-wing person, don't you have to shrug your head at some of this?
Well, I'm pretty hard to offend. So I can see both sides of it. I see sometimes I understand what people are saying when they explain why they find certain things offensive, but that doesn't necessarily mean I personally am offended by certain
nothing,
things. You know what I'm saying?
I am exactly what you're saying. Nothing offends me. I mean, that's a blanket statement. My point is, what I even always say to people, even when I'm in a group,
except
or
nothing
even,
offends you except millennials.
Yeah, well,
and Oscar's host.
Well, yeah, but my point is, even when I'm on the radio and stuff, you know, I'm saying, look, whatever happens in the studio, I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm there to perform and to entertain. If I make fun of you, I'm not making fun of you. I'm just trying to entertain. Once we're out of the studio, that's what this is. We're here to entertain people, and so Kevin Hart there, you know, once again, that's why Jerry Seinfeld stood up for him, because Jerry Seinfeld is somebody that says, he said, I will never play college. He said he won't play colleges anymore. You know, you can't make a joke. Right. Somebody's offended by something
right.
now.
I forgot about that, which is ironic because really Jerry Seinfeld is not really.
No,
I mean he's very funny, but he's not really edgy, and he's not.
But it doesn't. But you don't have to be edgy to offend somebody today.
Right.
That's my point.
That's the point. Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I give you a lot of credit in terms of I don't know. You know, you've got two young kids, and like I said, I don't have to worry about that. I don't know. I don't know. Do you think about, you know, do you think about this kind of stuff? To me, it's got to be very difficult to raise a kid in this atmosphere, because there are no foundational rules here. I mean, I don't know, you know, what's right or wrong. You know what? I don't know. Like, how are you doing this?
Well, I don't know, actually.
Because I'm sitting there going,
who says I'm doing a good job? I think, you know, it is. Yeah. I mean, we live in a complicated world today. So, I mean, when you have kids, you know, you have to just, you go with your gut and your own personal moral set. You know, and you just try to do the best you can. That's
well. I mean, I think there's got to be a point where somebody or some. I mean, this has to get to a point where people go, enough is enough. Because I mean, we're getting to this where there is such a level of sensitivity that and that. As I said before, all it takes is one person. But what gets me is, hey, that's fine. If somebody's offended, that's great. I'm all for somebody voicing their opinion. But we still live in a society where if one person could say one thing, and it creates this. Wait a minute, isn't there a majority? Kind of rule. We live in a democracy. Yes, everyone can talk, but we also are guided by the majority rules. And I'm just saying is that all it takes is one or two media savvy people who can get their word out how they are. And like I said, I don't know if this was a deliberate attack on Kevin Hart. I don't know if it was deliberate on. An attack on the Academy Awards that somebody out there said, well, hey, you know, why are they picking Kevin Hart? Why don't they pick, Katie Lang? I don't know where this came from.
Did you say Katie Lang?
Yeah. Well.
Now that would be an odd choice for the Oscars. Well, maybe for the Grammys.
Well, I'm just saying, but you know, I don't know.
But I know what you mean. I see what you're saying.
Is this coming from a pro gay lesbian kind of contingent?
No,
is it coming from an anti-black? I don't know who is digging this stuff up, but in my view, when you say Kevin Hart to me, I said, wow, what a safe choice. That's what I thought.
Wow, really?
Yeah, because in my mind, Kevin, if you're a movie star and your movie can make more than $100 million, then you are safe. Because if you can appeal to that wide of a mainstream, then that means that you are not dangerous. Because that many people, if you're able to appeal to that many people, that means that you are crossing over many groups. And to me, that you means you are safe. Yeah. So when I see Kevin Hart, I don't think of Richard Pryor. I don't think of Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, and I don't think of him as an unsafe choice. I just think that I actually think the scandal in his personal life, it's not his comedy that I think makes him not a safe bet. It's more the scandal in his personal life in recent years, which he also publicly apologized for. So I guess, you know, to some extent, everybody move on, you know.
Yeah, but what bugs...
I think it was like, you know, he was unfaithful to his wife or fiance, allegedly. But while she was about to have a baby, it just something about it that you could just see most people would just go, ooh, that's...
What I just don't like is that, and we talked about this at the beginning, and we'll wrap it up on this, is this idea of this permanent record. I you know, if you want me to be evolved, if you are in a minority group that you feel or you have felt that you have been kept down, and now you are beginning to chip away and rise up into an inclusion and an equality platform, I'm all for that. But if you don't allow me, who you view as somebody who may have kept you down, if you don't allow me to then accept you and change my views to see it your way, then you're being mean to me. You're doing the same thing to me that was done to you. And if you know how that felt, then you should say, I don't want to do that to somebody else.
But I don't know how does that relate to Kevin Hart?
Well, it relates to Kevin Hart because Kevin Hart said, look, I made these comments 10 years ago, but I have moved on. I am thinking differently. And yes, I said them. I have apologized, but that's not who I am anymore. And they don't accept that. They said, sorry, you said it. As long as you said it, it doesn't matter where you're at today. You said it then and you meant it then. And so that is your original sin. And that's my point, is can't I evolve? Don't you want me to think like you?
Oh, well, yeah, I totally agree.
So this guy should actually be applauded for saying, yes, I said this, but I moved on.
Well, I mean, and I think even more
or I moved forward.
Even more to the point, it was a long time ago, he's moved on. But as he said, I have already apologized for this, like publicly, like how many more times? Like he just didn't say it was like redundant. He's like, why am I apologizing for this again? I've already done that.
Well, once again, I think that was his own. I think I think when he got attacked for this, then he went into his own retrenching mode, and didn't handle it right. But I guess I'm just looking at this in the bigger picture and saying is that if we are going to get past this tumultuous time, this very divisive time, that we can't just keep pointing fingers at each other. We are all human. We are all flawed. And we have all done and said things that are not right. And what is right, that standard keeps changing every 10 minutes. And so who falls within it? I don't know. I guarantee you I can dig up some dirt on Tom Hanks, too, if you wanted me to.
Oh, my gosh. Now that... I mean, you want to take down Julia Roberts? While you're at it? What's going on here?
Well, talk to Lyle Lovett.
We can't take down America's sweetheart. Yeah. Okay, let's not be crazy.
Well, I guarantee you, over a couple of beers, Lyle Lovett's got something to say about Julia Roberts too.
Aww.
But anyway, yeah. So I don't know where we're at. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do if they do go for a group host. That was
what is your prediction? No host or group host?
I'll tell you, my preference would be no host. And I think that the head of the Academy should come out at the beginning and just say, welcome everyone and on with the show.
Right.
Because first of all, if you make jokes with that crowd, they're so oversensitive. If you, God forbid, if you don't kiss their ass, then you hear, ooh. So you know what? The president should come out and say, you know what? Welcome, everybody. We are here to celebrate The year in movie making to celebrate films and to acknowledge those who have done an amazing job. Let the show begin. And here's Brad Pitt and Amy Adams and off to the races. And who cares? We don't need Billy Crystal jumping around into, you know, the Thor movie, or he doesn't need to be Black Panther. we can't handle that. We can't even, because then if he did
be careful. Don't give them any ideas.
Well, yeah. Well, God forbid if Billy Crystal did a montage and pretended to be Black Panther, he would be crucified for that. How dare a white Jew pretend to be a black superhero? That's what they would say. Even if it's just a joke. There's no jokes anymore. You can't have jokes. So let's just do it that way. But so what do you think is going to happen?
I feel I would imagine they're going to go with a multi. Well, we'll say this. Unless Hugh Jackman jumps in the mix, I think they're going to go. And hey, that could happen. But I think that they're going to go with like a multi-host.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they will.
A multi-host scenario.
I'm sure they will. It's too bad that Robin Williams wasn't alive.
I don't think that the jokes will be eliminated. It'll just be a lot of bad jokes, as always.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll get through it.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be very interesting because they're supposed to be, you know, first of all, they're supposed to, as I suggested last year, they need to cut the time for the show that they're doing.
Yeah.
I did suggest they need to get rid of Jimmy Kimmel. So they've listened to all of my things. So if they're still listening, don't have a host.
Clearly, someone there has been listening.
So don't have a host.
Because all your wishes so far have come true. So let's see.
Well, I don't know if we've, as always, every week, I don't think we've ever settled anything, but we certainly had a fun time trying to.
No, never. nothing is ever resolved. Right. But that's okay.
And that's the charm. That's the charm of everything. Thank you, Emily. We will talk to you soon. If I don't talk to you before the Christmas break, have a great, great holiday, and thank you for all your great work in 2018.
Yeah, thanks. You have a happy holidays, too.
Very good. Take care, Emily.
Thanks, Jim.
And so you have been listening to another episode of the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. And once again, thank you for your loyalty, for your swiping, for your clicking, for whatever it is that you find us on a binging or a weekly basis. Your loyalty and your listening is always appreciated. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of the web to your screen.